Welcome to the December 19th meeting of the Kitsap County Planning Commission. We'll start off with introductions on our far left.
Aaron Murphy, North Kitsap.
Jim Swenson, South Kitsap.
Spencer Stegman, North Kitsap.
Richard Shattuck, Central Kitsap.
Tom Nevins, North Kitsap.
Joe Phillips, Central.
Care Ann Gonzalez Harless, South Kitsap.
Robert Baglio, South Kitsap. We've all taken a look at the agenda. Motion for adoption.
Also move.
Second.
All in favor? Okay. With that, move on to the approval of the minutes. Looks like we have two sets of minutes, November 14th and November 21st. Is there a motion for the approval of the minutes?
Move to approve the minutes of the November 14th meeting.
I'll second it.
Discussion? All in favor? Opposed? Abstain. Okay. And now the November 21st meeting minutes.
Move to approve the minutes of the 21st, or yeah, November 21st meeting.
There a second?
And I'll second it.
Discussion? All in favor? Opposed? Abstain. So that moves us to item number D, deliberation, 2017 Development Code Amendments. No Darren today?
Nope, Liz Williams will be presenting this item.
Okay.
All right, so tonight the department will review the code amendment process to date and then reintroduce the proposed code amendment, which you'll be considering during your deliberations this evening. So on October 17th, the department advanced a set of three amendments to the Planning Commission for your review during a work study session. The amendments impact permit requirements for vacation rentals, paved parking areas in urban growth areas, and maximum lot size requirements in urban growth areas. Following the work study session, a public comment form was made available online starting October 19th to obtain feedback regarding the proposed amendments. The Planning Commission held a public hearing on November 14th, and the public comment period was extended by the Commission to November 30th. The department received feedback from 12 individuals during the public comment period, and a summary of written and verbal testimony received has been included for your review in Attachment A. I'll go over those in a little more detail in just a minute. The department appreciates the residents that have taken the time to provide feedback. The code amendment process is one that relies on public dialogue and to ensure that the opinions of all stakeholders are heard. So based on public feedback received to date, the department will be withdrawing for consideration amendments which impact the permit requirements for vacation rentals and paved parking areas. Withdrawing these items will allow the department to conduct additional analysis and public engagement in the development of additional alternatives. So at this time, I'd be happy to answer any questions that the Planning Commission has about the process before diving into more detail about the proposed amendment tonight.
Any questions? No.
All right. So at this time, the department is advancing the proposed amendments, which will relax the existing maximum lot size requirement and add some flexibility. Kitsap County Code currently requires vacant parcels over 18,000 square feet within the urban low residential and urban cluster residential districts to automatically subdivide the parcel prior to development occurring on the property. The code requirement was established in 2016 as a reasonable measure and potentially impacts approximately 422 vacant parcels in Kitsap County. The current maximum lot size requirement has the potential to create unintended consequences. These include the creation of parcels that are heavily encumbered by critical areas. This can lead to an increase in reasonable use exemptions, which would allow for development essentially to occur in critical areas. And it also reduces flexibility to the development community to propose projects that would otherwise achieve minimum density, which again can lead to a reduction in the types of housing choices available in Kitsap County. So these are some of the consequences that were identified by the department and what spurred the code amendment change. So because of these consequences, the proposed exemptions would affect development projects from the subdivision requirements, so essentially not require or trigger a subdivision. So these cases would include if the net developable area of the existing parcel is less than 18,000 square feet, and if the development meets minimum density requirements for the zoning designation. So those two exemptions would be added based on this proposed code amendment. This amendment better aligns with Kitsap County Comprehensive Plan, countywide planning policies, and reduces the impact of the code requirements, or the potential impact, I should say, to approximately 199 vacant parcels in Kitsap County. So an analysis was included in your packet materials in Attachment D. And at this time, I'd just like to quickly run through the public comments we received related to this particular code amendment. And then I'll turn it back over to you for deliberations. So there were probably about a handful of...
I have one question. In the opening statement of the background, it indicated the reason that this reasonable measure was enacted in the first place. Because the county was not achieving urban densities as required. My question is the county achieving those densities now?
I don't have a specific answer to where we are in terms of our monitoring of achieving our urban-rural split. We are in the process of updating our records on that particular item at this time. But I think if I'm channeling your question here, how would this... Are you asking kind of how this would impact our urban-rural split? Or?
No, I'm noticing other comments in your description or the description that indicates this falls in line with county-wide planning policies. And the county-wide planning policies state that if you are achieving the temporary urban-rural split density requirement of three-fourths of the development going into the urban area, then if that happens, then the county reverts to a six-sevenths or some other fraction. It's closer to the piece.
20.
I don't have the number in my head, but not quite there yet. So if that is the case, in my deliberation, I intend to talk about how this may not be appropriate to bring this up at this time.
Any other questions before I review the public comment quick? All right. So we received some questions about how many parcels will be affected. Potentially affected by this particular code requirement. Right now, based on the analysis that was conducted, under current code conditions, approximately 422 vacant parcels are potentially impacted by this existing code requirement. Based on the proposed amendment, it would reduce the number of potential vacant lots impacted to 199 vacant parcels. There were also comments relating to removing the existing maximum lot size requirements in general from the code. The maximum lot size requirements were put in place to foster urban levels of development and increase consistency with the goals of the Growth Management Act. And so that is the intent of them. And the department does feel that this proposed amendment does still achieve that initial intent. And then there were some discussions about pre-planning and should this replace the maximum lot size requirement and parcels, exempting parcels that are a certain distance from existing sewer services. So based on the Growth Management Act requiring urban levels of service as development occurs in urban growth areas, pre-planning or shadow planning would allow for the creation of on-site septic systems, which is not an urban level of service. And this can lead to fragmentation in our urban infrastructure network. So the department does not feel that removing the requirement of the maximum lot size or going to a pre-planning as an alternative would be the proper direction at this time. So with that, I will turn it back over to the commission to conduct their deliberations.
Okay, thank you. Yes, Richard.
On the last comment, I'm curious how, if there is no sewer available, I'm curious as to how, if there's no sewer available, and our goal is to improve the number of homes being built to house people, and the size lots we're requiring wouldn't allow placement of on-site septic, I assume in many cases, gravity systems anyway. How are we promoting building of housing in urban growth areas that aren't served by sewer presently? So we're saying we're going to make you build 9,000 or subdivide to 9,000 square feet. We know there's no sewer. The only way you can build a home is with an on-site septic, but an on-site septic doesn't fit. So we just don't build. You subdivide and then don't build. Is that the policy?
So there is no requirement to subdivide if there is no development activity. So that's why this is a potential impact to some lots. The reason for not doing the shadow platting is because what that presumes is that people are building septic systems, and then we are leaving behind a legacy of septic systems that may last for decades after. Even after a sewer line is run, and in other jurisdictions, and even locally, we see legacy septic systems that are in areas where there are sewers, and those are known to present all kinds of water quality problems and the like. So again, it's inconsistent with an urban level of service. Likewise, we don't intend to run sewer lines in rural areas. So it's a matter of rural levels of service versus urban levels of service.
Another question?
Yeah, the other thing I just want to clarify is this relates just to vacant land. I had a comment from someone that here's the fact pattern. You've got a house in an ADU in an urban low zone, 4-acre plot or a piece of property, and to promote housing, they were going to break off the one lot or the ADU, 9,000 square foot lot, and sell that separately. And they were being told because of this that they could not do that. And of course, I don't think that's correct, but I want to make sure this relates just to vacant lands, not to existing parcels. And if there's a belief that this would prevent that from happening, maybe someone help me as to why.
We'll get the hang of this. So to your first question in terms of, yes, this does apply to vacant parcels. And then your second follow-up question.
Well, this isn't vacant. There's
right.
A 4-acre parcel. You're saying it just applies to vacant.
Correct.
So if I've got another house already, it doesn't apply. So the second question is, is there anything in this section of the code that would preclude what I just talked about, breaking off? You would leave behind 3.8 acres, mm-hmm. but have two lots, one 3.8 acres and a second one that's 9,000 square feet. Nothing in this code would prevent that.
From
breaking
splitting
off
that.
Right.
I do not believe that anything in this particular one would.
I believe,
I think that's a good question. I believe that the new lot would have to meet the current standard, but the existing lot would remain the same.
And if I may just clarify with Richard's first question about putting an on-site septic system on, if we're ready to build now on a 9,000 square foot lot and sewer isn't readily available, I mean, can you build a home? Are you limited to what you're able to build on the home if you only have 9,000 square feet? I guess that's where our confusion is.
I don't know if I can answer that question at this time in terms of what would hinder, if it would hinder the ability for that lot to develop. I think it would depend on the requirements of our Kitsap Public Health District and their look at on-site septic systems.
Okay. Developer, do you know?
You know, I'm not quite sure with, it depends if you have water. Because if you obviously if you don't drill a well and you have water, then I'm not sure, to be honest with you, what the minimum lot size is if you have water that's available to a municipality, but you have to have an on-site septic. I'm not sure what the minimum lot size is. But I guess whether that can actually support an on-site septic system
right.
is the question.
And it depends on your soil condition, too. So it's a moving target.
Yes. Aaron?
Just having been around single family enough and visualizing, you know, any plat from the 80s or 90s, there, you know, a lot of parcels are around that number, right? 0.2 acres, give or take. And in a platted development, it's almost always a function of it's all on sewer. So I could argue, at least theoretically, that at some level, the footprint requirement of a septic system and then the footprint and separation of a home are going to be challenging. You're not going to get a 3,600 square foot house and a four bedroom septic on a 9,000 square foot lot. That's my gut.
And I guess just to clarify, vacant land. So obviously if you have an existing house on a lot of this size and then you do a renovation of the house, is there anything at some point in time where you would trigger this if it went to a certain dollar value where you'd have to short plat the property and subdivide it, or is it strictly vacant land at this point in time?
The footnote is written that it is subject to vacant land, so this particular footnote relates just to vacant land. If there's another footnote in the code that would trigger, I don't have that answer right now.
Okay. Karen?
Well, doesn't this go back to the original issue of maximum density net versus gross? I mean, wouldn't it just be easier to just change that in the zoning code? And then you wouldn't have this problem? Because you're calculating max density on gross. There's an inconsistency between the two. I think Darren can probably, he worked on that. We had quite a deliberation on that this past, was it this summer or last summer? I can't remember. This summer. And that was the whole idea, is that you were allowing density on the gross versus the net.
But now we're.
And then we have, and currently that's an appeal before the, I think in March, was it Superior Court? I can't remember. So it seems really inconsistent, in my opinion.
So I think there's a leg. I think you're relating to another footnote that is in the use table that does allow for density to be calculated either on the net developable area or the gross developable area of a lot, or the gross acreage of a lot. So that's for determining density. This particular footnote relates to the triggering of a subdivision requirement in the code. So
I'm looking at max density, the definition of max density.
Okay. I guess I'm not sure if I quite understand your question.
Well, I mean, typically you use like 5 to 9 homes per acre, use 9 on the gross and 5 on the net is typically the way.
Well, that was what was debated, and that was because of the issue of the inconsistency with how we calculate buildable lands. And anyway, it was a big issue. We discussed it at length and had made a recommendation to go with net at that time for the Planning Commission to the board, but the board chose not to do that.
So Jim Bolger, Department of Community Development. So the issue I think that Karen is bringing up was an appeal to our 2016 comprehensive plan. It did go to the Growth Management Hearings Board, and the county's position was upheld during that proceedings. And then the appellant at that point subsequently took it to Superior Court. So that's waiting to be determined whether the methodology that the county used in its land capacity analysis versus how it actually implements its zoning is still unresolved in Superior Court. We still are in compliance with our methodology as far as the Growth Management Hearings Board is considered. I think getting to the earlier question of the square footage relative to the on-site septic system, I believe the health district requires typically a minimum of 12,800 square feet for a lot, and that's to provide for the drain field as well as the reserve area associated with it. And county code does allow subdivisions that can be supported with large on-site septic systems or community septic systems. So that's one way of supporting kind of higher levels of development in the absence of the infrastructure. The shadow platting, the county did used to allow shadow platting to take place. That has subsequently been repealed from our code, and part of that was because it was actually an impediment to being able to encourage infrastructure and development to pay for that infrastructure to go out and serve subdivisions as they were coming online. So as opposed to developing on single on-site septic systems and then putting the house and the infrastructure in such a way that you didn't prevent further subdivision, really wasn't triggering that first subsequent subdivision, and you were just getting a lot of really large lots in the urban growth areas and not the density that we're trying to achieve.
Okay.
So still, my question is, why don't we just pick a lane? Is it going to be net or is it going to be gross?
I think we've picked a lane, and that's
but
being
this is inconsistent with that.
How is this being inconsistent?
Because I'm looking at the definition of max density in the county code, and it's basing it on gross. Maybe I have the wrong page in the county code.
And I'm trying to make the connection with the proposal in front of the Planning Commission right now in terms of how we handle these maximum lot sizes, and do we require people to automatically go through the subdivision process, or can we provide some flexibility that takes into account maybe the site-specific conditions of those 18,000 square foot vacant lots?
So perhaps, I know, if we could, maybe, I believe the proposal that's in front of, maybe you could state that so we understand. It's just been a while. I believe it's as we presented in attachment 4 that you gave to us a couple weeks ago, just so we do understand the exact verbiage and what's being proposed by staff. We can do that.
If you just want to swing around, I apologize that our projectors are not working. But the proposed change essentially, if you want to read through, for new building permit applications on vacant lots over 18,000 square feet located in the urban low residential and urban cluster residential zones, the maximum lot size shall not exceed 9,000 square feet. This restriction shall not apply if the net developable area of the existing parcel is less than 18,000 square feet, or the project application will meet minimum density requirements as established by Chapter 17.420, the Density Dimensions and Design Use Table.
Okay. So that's what's being proposed by staff. Do we have a motion for the adoption of this proposal?
I move that the Planning Commission adopt the proposed change to the code section 17.420.060 as presented by staff.
Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Discussion? Jim?
I just want to get my head around what we're doing now. Is this implementation in the code of a reasonable measure that was part of the comp plan package in 2016?
I think it was 2006.
Well, when we last updated the yep. comprehensive plan policies, there were some reasonable measures that we spent quite a bit of time on.
Correct.
Was this, I don't recall exactly, was this one of them that was sent on to the hearings board?
Correct.
And we're now putting it into code form?
This was actually put into code in 2016. This particular amendment that you're deliberating on right now will be to modify that and add some additional flexibility and relax the prescriptive automatic requirement of a subdivision to occur.
So we're dealing with more flexibility.
Yes, absolutely. One of the more consistent questions that we've been getting in the implementation of this section of the code is if we're meeting density anyway, then why require the subdivision? And that's what this is intended to do.
Tom?
As I see it, it looks to me like the code, the footnote will allow, at the end of the day, will allow development on large, non-urban-sized lots. That is not meeting a density. The first one especially, the developable area, actually, that's Amendment A, I guess, does not require a subdivision at 18,000 square feet, which is, it could be two or three lots, maybe four. In any case, that kind of flies in the face of a reasonable measure. It takes it down to a point where you're developing in a large lot. The second one, I'm not sure how it will be used. I haven't seen any examples of how they would achieve the density. I'm supposing that you could have a series of large lots. I don't know who would take advantage of this in what way. I don't. And we've seen some interesting games played in the past. Maybe that's all over. Maybe everyone's looking for the community interest these days and not just looking for a chance to tweak the law. But in any case, for the basic reason that it allows development in the urban growth area of large lots without subdividing, where subdivision would be possible, I will be a no vote.
It would allow development on lots larger than 18,000 square feet, provided that the minimum densities are still met.
And the minimum density might be on a five-acre parcel or something like that? Is that what I'm looking at?
Yeah, there should be no loss of density. So you could have attached housing, for example, that would get the same number of units on, but without triggering a requirement for subdivision.
You know, I think we also need to keep in mind, not to interrupt you, but we're talking about 18,000 square feet. We're not talking about 5 acres. 18,000 square feet is actually less than a half an acre of land.
It's four-tenths of an acre, actually.
Yeah, so, I mean, to put it into perspective, we're not talking about a five-acre piece.
Right.
So
I know, but you cannot meet the
Well, I guess the point is if they can't meet it, then they're going to have to divide it. I mean, that's what it says right there, right? But they're just letting them use net developable area. So once again, if you have a parcel that's 18,000 square feet or larger, and the whole thing is covered with wetlands or steep slopes or something like that, and the only area that's actually developable is less than that, then they're saying you don't necessarily have to subdivide it.
Yeah, I note the confusion between the lot size, which may include wetlands, tidelands, and streams and cliffs and everything else, and the difference between that and developable area. So I think that is the area that needs to be addressed. What is the developable area? And in this case, Amendment A says the net developable area of the existing parcel is less than 18,000 square feet. So you have a developable area that it could be subdivided if it is 18,000 square feet. There are lot sizes in the urban growth area that are smaller than that, and smaller than 9,000. You see what my point is there?
I wouldn't want to live on them. Anyway,
I understand that that you might want a large lot and move a bit, run your dog and all that sort of thing. But we're talking about developing density in an urban area. That's what urban growth areas are for. And you can't just have a country manor in the urban growth area. That's not what's on.
No, I understand. I don't think this allows that. And once again, we're talking net developable area. So once again, they're trying to address those parcels that have very little area that you can actually develop. And so they're looking at that as opposed to the entire area of the parcel. Well, we have a motion and a second. There's more discussion.
I'm just going to call for the question.
Okay. So all those in favor of accepting the proposal as presented by staff, raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. All those opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you, commissioners.
Thank you. Next item is item E, online permitting presentation. And I guess we have Natalie Marshall and Veronica.
Good evening, planning commissioners. Thank you for having us. Are we going to ask them to sit down? Okay, if you don't mind, just so you can see our lovely presentation. Actually, it's a demonstration. Would you mind coming down into the audience here? And then you can view our one working projector.
Okay.
Thank you.
We can pass the handheld mic if you have questions to ask down here, or we can wait until you come back up. It's up to you.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Thank you for having us. I'm going to get us started, Veronica Bassin with DCD. And just on a personal note, I've worked with DCD for several years now, and I'm more than happy, super excited, and proud to be working on this project to bring full online permitting to the residents of Kitsap County, as well as the building and developer, those in the building and developer industry, the technology, and moreover, the convenience. So I am going to start a presentation or a demonstration. I'm going to show you what it looks like from the public view, and then I'm going to show you what it looks like from the staff view, so you can kind of get an internal peek at what our staff will do once you apply for a permit online. And then I'll pass the presentation over to Natalie Marshall, who is our outreach and education technician, and she will talk about all the hard work she's putting into the tools and resources and training for those that need to apply for permits. So the first step to applying for a permit is going to our online permit center. If you haven't seen it before, this is what it looks like. I've already created an account, and Natalie will talk about that part in a moment, but I'm just kind of cutting to the chase here. I've already got my account set up, and so I am going to pretend to be an applicant applying for a permit. Oh. Great question. You do not. You can do public searches. You can review public notices. We have a limited view of every single permit that's applied for that the public can see without actually creating an account. You only need an account if you actually want to apply or pay fees on an account, or you're somehow related to the contractor or something like that. So I've clicked on applications. I'm going to the apply online section. As you can see, I've already got some activity. I've been doing a lot of testing the last couple weeks, so I've got fees due and lots of stuff going on, but when you first start out, you wouldn't really have anything here. Oh, and you also need an account to request inspections on a permit. So here, I'm going to select the category of permits that my project is part of. For the purposes of the demonstration, I'm going to start with fire code permits. They have been live for a couple months now. The rest of them were transitioning online. The last phase is residential, which will be starting to go online the first week of January. So I'm choosing a fire. I'm going to choose a fire sprinkler permit. This part is just a brief explanation. It's starting off my project, and I'm going to keep it really simple. Here, I'm choosing my site. I can use my address if I have one. For properties that are vacant land, you can instead use the parcel number. Here, I can select my contractor, and you can see in the light gray, I'm moving through these tabs up top. Details of the permit. This section is specific to the type of permit you're applying for. So like I said, in this case, I'm putting in a fire sprinkler, but if I was applying for a residential permit, it would ask me different questions. And if I was applying for a, you know, commercial permit or whatever, these are all going to be specific to that. Here I'm going to put in the bid price for my project. And last, I'm going to review all my information. This part also gives me instructions on what I need to do after I click the submit button down below. But this all looks correct to me, so I'm going to get started. This online permit center is real time with our internal system. So as soon as I hit submit and I have a permit number, it shows up on the internal side. On the top here, you can see that this is a status bar. It talks to me about the status of my permit, my expiration date, the fees that I need to pay. I can go through here and pay. And then the most important part is I'm going to go down to the submittal section. And again, this is specific to the permit type. And next to each item that I need to upload, I'm going to click on the files link. So here, I need to upload my project application, and I've got my upload button. So I'm going to go find my document on my desktop and upload it here. After I upload a document, I have the option in my settings to get emails that tell me every time I've gotten upload submitted successfully. That might get excessive. Some people might be applying for 10 permits a week or something like that. So there is an option to go in and manage those notifications to just keep it to the important things that you need. So back to my permit. After I have successfully uploaded, I'll start to see numbers here. If I put in a set of plans, I'll see, and it's just one file, I'll see one file. And after I've finished with that, I'm done. It's now in the department's hands to go and review. The permit tech will review just like they do at the counter. Aaron?
Do you guys have a preference, or does it more user-friendly if one PDF file is all the architectural and structural sheets?
Yep, we have very specific submittal guidelines specifically for plans. And you will see for construction plans in particular, we only want one file. When you see our internal site, which I'll show you in a moment, that's how the site uses those plans.
if it were something like we needed photos, those could be one file each, things like that. But for the plans in particular, you'll see it's going to be a grouped set.
So one more wet stamp and sign, then repro scans them in, one file for the whole set.
Yes. And there's other guidelines in that packet too. They need to be flattened. We don't want layers and some other things like that. Not too many things. There's like between three and five like really important things. So as I said, the permit technicians, instead of you sitting at the counter with them looking through the documents, now they've been triggered to go and review the documents at their desks here in our office. And they're going to go one by one, and just like they do now, they communicate with our customers and say, oh, it looks like you missed something here, or we need clarification before we put this permit under review. Same thing. We just won't be doing it face-to-face. We'll be doing it over email. We'll be doing it over the phone. And we also want to roll out in 2018 live chat. And I actually talked to a permit tech that helped a customer last Friday, and she said live chat would have been perfect for it because he was at his home applying for the permit, and he kept having questions. So they were emailing back and forth. They could have just soon spoke on the phone, but she said if there was live chat, she could have it would have made it a little bit more efficient. So we're excited about that. So like I said, you're done. You have a permit. It is set up to give you an email as soon as the permit goes under review. And that depends on the different permit type. Building permits, if you're considered counter complete, it'll go under review right away with the permit tech's input. Land use permits, they currently get an intake appointment, and that will be the same. We did some trials of those this week. We did one yesterday, and we'll do one more tomorrow. And at this point, we're giving the applicant the option to come into the office like they used to. It might be a very complex project, and you might still want to sit with that staff and be there as they look through it for the first time to ask or answer any questions. But for a very straightforward project, maybe you just want to leave your phone number, and if the staff has any questions, they'll give you a call. For now, as we roll out the online permitting, we have a digital grace period through March 31st. So that would be true if you wanted someone to hand stamp it and turn it in that way. But eventually, this will be it, and this will mark you counter complete.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. That is one thing that's different from the current system. Currently, if it's not counter complete, we won't take it in. But that is different now. So if it's if it's incomplete, we're going to work with you to get it counter complete. There's no question that's not going to change. But ultimately, we're probably not going to let a permit application sit there incomplete for 3 months. We're going to cancel it. Just have you start over when you're ready. That's another good point, because you don't want to sit here and save this and say, oh, my architect still needs to work on my drawings. They'll be done in a couple of months. No, you do this part when you're ready to go. You got your geotech report if you needed it and that sort of thing. You don't want to sit this and leave it as a placeholder. It would just kind of hang out unnecessarily. And we'll work with you on that. We don't have a hard and fast deadline. Like if it's in for 72 hours, we're going to go cancel them all, but we're going to be communicating with all the applicants. Absolutely. The power, the popular staff consultations, or the higher level meetings, if it even needs it, are still going to be there. That is not changing at all. And you can still come in. Our development assistants, 9 to noon, any discipline of review, that will still be there. We are not barring the doors. Our doors are still open, normal hours. The permit techs are there. We just, for the people that are ready to go, they can have the convenience of applying at their office or their home. Anything else? Okay. So, like I said, this is now out of the applicant's hands. I'm assuming that I got everything in that I needed to, and my project is underway with the department. So now I'm going to turn to the internal side. And if you've never seen it, this is the first page of our SmartGov database. This is how our reviewer staff manages their workload. They get assigned projects. So I'm going to log in here and pretend that I'm a reviewer. And I have one in particular that I want to show you. So here is a pretend fire permit, and I'm going to pretend I'm a fire marshal reviewer. So I'll go into this permit project and review some plans. So instead of going and picking up a big file off the shelf, they'll just be sitting at their desks and logging in here. And they're going to open up this, in this instance, it's a set of installation plans. And I'm going to click on this little icon that looks like a piece of paper. Oops, my pop-up is blocked. Thank you. And this is Electronic Plan Check Software. That's the name of it, EPC. So this is just a set of plans that I grabbed from a project, but really, you know, you can only see one page here. Really, this could be designed, this is designed to handle all of our permits. We could have a 50-page site development activity permit, or a 20-page residential or commercial plan set, or Harrison, or one of the schools. So large or small, this is how our staff is going to review permits. Those stamps won't be there. This was just, like I said, a set of plans that I scanned. So here, there's some efficiencies gained. There's measuring tools. There's markup tools. I can add comments directly to the plans. So let's say that this is a fire sprinkler, and I see that they actually need additional sprinkler heads over here in this office. They left some out. I can click right on the plan where I want to write a comment and make my note. This will show up on the customer's side when they go log into the online permit center after I'm done. And I'll show you what that looks like on their side. So I'm going to finish all this up. I can make notes. I can highlight areas where there's concern. Currently, we send out a report with all of the information request items. That's what we call them. And they'll still have the report. They'll just have a corresponding PDF that they can look over and see exactly where in a plan or a drainage plan or a landscaping plan or a construction plan where the reviewer had concerns. So I'm going to save this. And as a reviewer, I'm pretty much done. I go back into our system and mark it approved or not approved, and then get notification back to the applicant. So now I have other demonstration permits where you can see what that looks like. Let me show you what an issued permit looks like. We'll jump to that. You're curious about that. So up top in my long list of permits, I've been really busy this year. I've got a permit that is ready to issue online, and it's telling me to select the issue button at the top of the permit. So and this isn't the only instruction you're going to get. Instead of sitting with a permit technician and getting all the information of what to do next, I'm going to get an email that lays all this out. This is, you know, a little note, but it's not going to tell you how to do everything. So I'm going to click on my permit. This has been approved. I don't have any fees owing. If I did have fees, I would need to pay them first, and then this blue issue button shows up. So I click on that. and now I have an issued permit. At this time, I can generate my permit, which, if you recall, this is the list of conditions that you would normally have initialed for and signed for in our office. It's the same document. We're probably going to get rid of this stuff on the right-hand side because we don't need those anymore. So this right here needs to be on site for your inspections, as well as, if I go down to the submittal section, again, this is where I originally uploaded my plans for review. I click on my construction plans, and now in this markup file column, I've got some marked up plans. In this case, they were approved, and I can see the approved stamp. As an applicant, it is now my responsibility to print one set of plans for the job site for my inspections. So we've got the permit conditions, we've got the set of plans. Depending on the permit, there might be a site plan and a couple other things like that, but that'll be in our instructions. And then I've got everything I need to start scheduling my inspections. Does that help? Great question. Why do we need a printed plan on the job site? Twofold. One is, in some areas of the county, there isn't great reception for our inspectors to access the system, and they need to see the plans so they can see what they're approving during their inspections. Second fold is, we've actually talked to some contractors, and they have actually told us they feel it's best practice to have an approved set of plans on site. Now, if there's some technology out there, like I think Harrison, they have a whole station, they have a whole office set up where they have everything electronically, and the inspectors can go in and pull up everything. They've got these big screens, they can pull up everything they need to see. That would be fine too, but most people aren't going to make a little electronic station office for a smaller project. The inspector or the staff, the contractor? Oh, yeah, you could. You could. Like I said, we've just been gotten feedback from builders, and they feel for their workers' sake, they feel more comfortable having a set of plans. And we've, yeah. At this time, we're not downloading all the plans for every single inspection, but we can take that into consideration. Right, so downloading before they go out for the day, when they make their route, they go download every set of approved plans. We can take that into consideration. It's not part of the process at this point, but we can definitely pass that on to Jeff Remack. He's the construction supervisor, and he can consider it. They've tried to work on efficiencies for inspections, get as many in as they possibly can, but I'm sure he's open to thinking about it. Mm-hmm. Yes. They need to be able to scale it out at the job site. And that's where we're not really having a hard and fast rule of size. Some people's plans are only 11 by 17 to scale. That's fine. That's what they were drawn to. And then some larger plans, I think our Harrison ones, it feels like they're 8 feet tall practically because that's how they were drawn to. So, mm-hmm. Okay, so if that's all the questions on issuance, I just want to show you one more related note. If by chance there was a project that you didn't get them approved right away, we had some questions or we needed some clarification or correction on the plan, you would go to your permit, and again, you're going to get notification of this, but here you can see this permit number here has been returned to the applicant. It's been returned to me, and the review indicates corrections are needed. So I'm going to go back to my submittals section, look at my plans. You see I've got a version 2 here pending. That's my part. It wants me to upload a new set of plans. And if I scroll down to previous submittals, again, in the markup file column, I've got a marked up set. Here, I can pan over my notes and see where staff have written me comments, basically. Those same notes that you saw on the internal side, that's how they show up. And then I'll review them, make my corrections, and put in my corrected set. And again, the cycle will start over from there. So essentially, those few steps are the life cycle of a permit. So at this time, I'll pass it to Natalie.
Hi there. I'm just going to give you a real quick overview of our outreach and kind of the enhancements we've made to hopefully prepare folks for this transition. So here's our website. I'm going to show you real quick our online permitting website where we have a lot of neat resources. It's called Permits Whenever, Wherever, and that speaks to the convenience factor that we earlier talked about. So this is our online permitting site. We have a couple resources. We're going to briefly show you, we have video tutorials that we're currently in the process of making, because if you can get your permit whenever or wherever, you also need questions answered hopefully at 2 a.m. or whenever you decide to submit. So down here we have how to set up your online permit center account, which we didn't go over today. I know we don't have speakers, so there's a voice.
This first tutorial will demonstrate on how to create your account in the online permit center.
We're just going to show you just a quick second of this.
Account information. You will need to apply for your actual permit.
So it takes them step by step on how to set up the account. So hopefully, if they are in the process of it, they can just get right to it. And so the other ones that we are going to create are how to apply for a permit, so what Veronica just showed you, how to issue your own permit, so that they're going to have those very viewable cues, so they can look for the issue button or whatever they may need little assistance with. We also have some screenshots if they don't want to watch a video. That's another way to look at the resources. And the other thing that you can find here on this website is our application packets right there in the middle. So this is, you may have been wondering, when you get to the online permit center and you see all the submittal items, well, how do I know what to upload with my permit? Well, this is how you're going to know in advance. This is really where we want our customers to start. So we're going to look at a commercial permit today. So this is going to lay out for them exactly what they're going to need to submit in order to be successful. One enhancement we were particularly wanting to make with this whole transition is to have fillable forms. So right here, this is our fillable form. It actually has some skip logic or conditional logic. So if you are looking, you know, some of our permits have combined, it may be for two different permit types, or, you know, we have logic questions, you know, as far as...
Here, I'll pull this one up. I pulled the wrong one.
Oh, perfect. Thank you. So, for example, our tenant improvement, has this space been occupied in the past 2 years? And with a previous tenant. If you say yes, you can go ahead and put that previous tenant. If you say no, you're going to have to actually use a different permit. So we really want to try and be able to communicate, you know, aside from our chatting with the permit tech and when lobby hours aren't open, to be able to enhance this experience and help them through this process to make it as seamless as possible. So one of the most important things is to include the email in section 2. Go down a little bit. Well, those are our submittal items. I'm sorry. We'll skip to this. But so these are the submittal items that they're going to have to upload once you get to the online permit center. And so we will, you know, using that logic, try and help you know exactly the submittal items you will be required to upload. Because in the online permit center, some of our permits, especially our Title 21 and our land use, you know, you could have all the technical reports needed based on your land or your parcel, but it may be an easier project and you may only need a couple. So we want to try and communicate that on our forms rather than in the online permit center. Mm-hmm. And then if you go down a little bit, there's a place to put in an email address. So this says email address where you want this PDF sent to. So once you enter that and fill out all the information in your project application, you go to the bottom and you have the option to either save it or email it to yourself. And this is going to send it to that email address in a PDF form. So it's going to be ready for you to then upload it with the rest of your documents and your required submittal items in the online permit center. So we're very excited about that. So in addition, we're also, our worksheets, so stormwater worksheets, energy code, that's going to be our kind of phase two. So we're going to work to get those all fillable as well. As fast as one person can work, we're going to get there. Mm-hmm. Yes, for now. So I'm going to work furiously as soon as we get all the residential live online, then that's going to be our next, you know, the next ones to tackle would probably be energy and storm. Okay, you got it. I have a 7-month-old, so I don't sleep anyway. So it's fine. It's fine. It's okay. Exactly. Okay. So the other things I just wanted to cover real quick is the outreach that we've been doing. So we're trying really hard to communicate as much as possible with our residents that this is coming down the pike. We've been sending out lots of gov delivery blasts, electronic and email updates as far as our training opportunities. We've had 6 training opportunities throughout the county. So we had quite a few down here. We had one up in Kingston a couple weeks ago. And then actually on Thursday, which I think is 2 days away, like I said, no sleep. We have one up in on Newberry Hill. So we're trying to, you know, get a nice spot for everybody to come learn exactly what you saw, the demonstration on how to set an account up, how to apply for a permit, just really building that familiarity and answer any process questions. We've really been able to populate our frequently asked questions with folks that have come out to our trainings. And so far, we've trained about 55 people, and we're going to continue into January to make sure that we give lots of ample opportunities. We've gone to different citizen advisory groups throughout the county, different neighborhood, or not neighborhood groups, but we went to a business networking group, just really trying to get the word out there and do what we can that way. So that's really what we've been up to. Do you guys have any other questions that we might be able to answer? Well, thank you for your time. You. We appreciate it.
Well, I believe that takes us to, well, it's the last item on the agenda. Anything for the good of the order?
Just a quick announcement. Gina Bursky's and my terms were renewed.
Okay.
We're back for 4 years.
Okay. Well, congratulations. Yes. So, upcoming meetings. I believe it says January 2nd. Is that correct? It seems odd. Isn't that a day we're shut down? The county shut down?
I think I'm physically shut down.
Why am I? It should be the 3rd of Tuesday.
I'll be in Mexico.
Yeah, I mean, we are open for business on the 2nd.
Oh,
we're
yeah?
not closed,
okay.
But I don't know what's on the agenda. So if there's nothing on the agenda, we may cancel now.
Okay.
I can see you're all really disappointed in that.
Stand by.
So, I mean, you're going to let us know, or it is officially canceled?
We will let you know.
Okay.
Nice try.
Okay, I thought I'd just check and see. Okay. All right, anything else? All right, well, wish everyone a Merry Christmas. Meeting adjourned.
Thank you.
Happy New Year.